Well, no sooner has Jesus been born than here we are, and he's growing up. And we were told that this morning Jesus is 12 years old. And as you read through this little passage, it's an interesting one from Luke chapter 2. You get so much out of it. Ed, we're told at the beginning, every year his parents went up to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. Just interesting to note how Jewish the background and upbringing of Jesus was. You know, he was brought up within the cradle of Judaism. And it was customary for Jews to go to the temple 3 times a year. And you can think to yourselves, because I know how animated you get when you get quizzes. You can think to yourself, what were those occasions when Jews were supposed to go to the temple? Obviously, there's the one today, when it was the Passover. They were also supposed to go up for tabernacles, and also for the Feast of Pentecost. And not all Jews could make it, but if they could possibly do so, they always used to try and go for the Passover. And you remember that Jesus was now living with his parents in Nazareth. And Nazareth was about 60 miles from Jerusalem. So they would have had a journey of about 3 days, probably 3 days, 3 or 4 days. I remember I did it in about an hour on a coach. But it looks inhospitable country. And even today, you know, there's vast tracts with nothing in between. And you can imagine having to set off on this journey to go to Jerusalem for the Passover. About 3 days they would have travelled. And they would get there. And Jesus was, as I say, 12 years old. I tend to think of Jesus being, in this story, you know, when we think of this story, think of him as a little boy. But actually, 12 years old was quite old, in a sense, then. We don't know if they had bar mitzvahs at this time in Judaism. But a bar mitzvah now, for a Jewish boy that becomes an adult and takes on all the responsibilities of Judaism, is at the age of 13, isn't it? So here was Jesus, just a year younger than that. And probably his mother, when she became pregnant with Jesus, would not have been very much older than 12 herself. So in a sense, you know, we think of him as a little boy, but he's growing up now. This is Jesus taking on adulthood. It's hard for us to understand, because nowadays children don't grow up as quickly. They hang around a lot longer. I'm told, here you go, here's another little quiz for you. I'm told that the average age for taking on a house as a first-time buyer, so that when you first buy your first house, how old are you? 37. 37. Now, I'm told by parents of older children how they come back and try to take over the nest, because, you know, it's so expensive to buy a house. But in those days, you know what, you were quickly sort of moving on. So this is Jesus not as a baby, but someone who's starting to take on all aspects of growing up. So was Mary a bad mother? Here they are, they go to Jerusalem for the Passover, and then they set off back to Nazareth, and Jesus is behind in Jerusalem. And I was trying to work out, you know, how, you know, was she a bad mother? Of course, we always say, was she a bad mother? We'd never say, was Joseph a bad father? Because it's always the mother's fault, isn't it? You probably know, even today, you know, we say these unmarried mothers, we say, don't we? Unmarried mothers. And because it's always the woman's fault. And we don't say these unmarried fathers who have just gallivanted off and left the poor woman looking after the little love. And so was it Mary's fault or Joseph's fault? It's important to try and realise, I think, how the families were structured and how they travelled. They wouldn't have travelled alone. They would have been in a party, probably, because people travelled in groups for safety. It might have been that the women were away from the men, you know, the men being separated from the women. Mary might have thought that Joseph had him. Joseph might have thought that Mary had him. Important to remember that Jesus had brothers and sisters. So Mary might have been, you know, all at odds because she's looking after other children. And so it's quite understandable, reasonably understandable, that they might have thought the other had them, extended family had them. I actually can understand how anyone can forget a child. I would never be critical in these things. I remember going out to the park with Alexandra once and coming back and, you know, sitting down, having my coffee, and Colin said, "So, where's Alexandra?" And as I disappeared out the house, there she was in the park, in a pram. Still safe and sound. Still safe and sound. So it's very easy to understand. You can forget. You can forget about these things. So I'm not at all critical of Mary or Joseph for forgetting. And there was Jesus when, of course, it's an interesting thing, actually. You look back and there's a lovely phrase in here. It says, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. And after 3 days, they found him. After 3 days. Now, of course, if you read after 3 days, as an early Christian, after this was written, the phrase 3 days would have immediately resonated, wouldn't it? You don't, you know, that's, so what it's kind of doing, what Luke is doing is, he's kind of tying in the very beginning of Jesus' understanding of who he was with his death and resurrection. He's trying to link the two in a literary way. 3 days is a significant and important phrase. And it's important for us to realise that Jesus was now growing up, discovering his way in life, trying to work out what God wanted him to do with his life, trying not to just, you know, my dad was a carpenter, I'll be a carpenter, and my children will be a carpenter. He's just trying to think through what his destiny was. And this is important. It's important for Jesus. It's important for all of us. Important for us to allow children to do that. And Mary says, you know, didn't you know that we've been really upset and what have you? And Jesus has a lovely phrase which he uses. And Sam and I have been delving into the Greek in the vestry because as we were reading this in the 8 o'clock in the 8:30 communion this morning, I thought that doesn't make sense. In our Bible reading here, it says, "Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" Now, can anyone think back to when we used to use the King James Version of the Bible? Do you remember what that used to say? It didn't say, "Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" It said, "Father's business," which is why I put that up on the screen as you came in this morning. "Didn't you know I had to be about my Father's business?" Now, either it says the word house or it doesn't. So we went back into the Greek, didn't we, Sam? And it doesn't say house at all. It doesn't say house at all. It just kind of says, "Didn't you know I had to be about my Father's?" You know, it's kind of saying, you know, I've got something more important to do. There's someone else who's, you know, got a call on my life. And that's what Jesus is sort of saying. It's a very interesting phrase. And it's worthwhile just remembering that Jesus is talking about something more than simply being in the temple, although the temple was, of course, important to him. And I tried to work out what this reading would be saying to us this morning, what points are important. And I thought that, you know, as we finish with Christmas and all the fairy tales and stories and all the joy and excitement of it all, here we are being moved on to consider something very serious and very important, you know, about what is the real Jesus saying to us. And what does God say to us this morning about our lives? And it's about being about our Father's business. That's what it's all. That's what we're called to do as Christians. And I was thinking how we could do this. We tend to think of the importance of what we shouldn't do rather than what we should do. I think that's a human failing, but it's certainly true of Christians. We think that Christians are people who don't do certain things. But of course, Christians are much more than that. They're people who are about their Father's business. They're about getting things done that God wants us to do. And I was thinking about the terrible thing that happened just before this, when Jesus was a little boy, how Herod had commanded the death of these children and how children were killed following the birth of Jesus. I think of all the terrible things that go on in the world, which we as Christians should be involved in. And I guess when those babies were killed, there'd have been people who just stood back and said, well, you know, didn't do anything. And, or perhaps they couldn't do anything. But there's lots of things that go on in our world which we can do something about. and which we should be doing something about. I was reading the papers just recently, and I can't think who it was, but it was a prominent clergyman from London who had come up to Bedford, and he'd stood outside Yarlswood with a bag of Christmas presents for the children. I can't remember who it was. I think it was a dean of a cathedral or something. Does anyone remember? Yeah. Anyway, he stood outside Yarlswood in his robes, clerical robes, with a bag of toys, and he wasn't allowed entry to give the toys to the children. I mean, it was a stunt, obviously, but it was quite a good one because it got press coverage, and it showed that, you know, there are children locked up in Yarlswood over Christmas for long periods, and it was on Radio 4, actually, about the impact that this has upon children psychologically, you know, to be behind bars, that it's damaging for them. Now, I'm not making a judgment about Yarlswood or anything else. I'm just saying that there are those people who feel that it's a very bad thing for children to be locked up, and they're doing something about it as Christians. And that's good. And I think as Christians, we've got to reflect on what's going on in society and be about our Father's business and try and make changes. There were some lovely comments which I managed to pick up from various leaders. That the first was in the 18th century, and it was the philosopher and politician Edmund Burke who criticised discrimination in Britain's governing of Ireland. Following his criticism, he lost his seat because it wasn't popular at the time, but he said, all that is needed for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. All that is needed for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. Evil doesn't triumph if we're going about our Father's business. That's the point. And then Albert Einstein wrote, he was the scientist, he had to flee Nazi Germany in 1933 because he was a Jew. And he wrote, the world is a dangerous place, not because of those who do evil, but because of those who watch and let it happen. And evil, of course, doesn't flourish when we're about our Father's business. And then Martin Luther King, he, you know, the great pioneer of civil rights in the United States, who was assassinated for what he did in 1968, he said, the one who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as the one who helps perpetuate it. The one who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as the one who helps perpetuate it. And of course, evil doesn't grow when we're about our Father's business. There's other quotes, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, but perhaps the most famous one is attributed to Pastor Niemöller. And he was one of those who railed against Nazi. At first he supported Nazi Germany, and then he, of course, he realised what it was all about, and he rebelled against it. And these words are attributed to him. He says, first they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. Now, we know those words, and they're important words. And again, it's about being about our Father's business. Now, thankfully, there are an awful lot of people who are about their Father's business. In Bedford, thank God. You know, you look at the people who are at the bottom of the pile in Bedford, and who is it who helps them? It's the Christian community. You know, you think of the work of the King's Arms Project with the homeless. You think of the work of the Prebend daycare centre. You think of the work of those who are out in the centre with all the people who've got alcoholic and drug problems out at... I wasn't thinking of street passers, but there's another example, Vera. No, I was thinking about the lovely community. Emmaus. You think of, you know, any group of people who are at the bottom of the pile in Bedford, it's probably Christians who are working with them, isn't it? It probably is. Because it's Christians who pick up where society leaves off. And this is an encouragement to us all. It's an encouragement to recognise that which is going on, and to give praise to those people who are about their Father's business, and for each one of us to realise that just as Christ came to an awareness of his responsibilities, so of course do we also. Amen.